Morning. Today's daf in Chulin Ayin Ches. We're starting today in Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. We are coming off of a Mishnah in Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph. Mishnah spent some time talking about the Shilya. The amniotic sac. Amniotic sac of an animal is that which encases a fetus inside of the animal. And first and foremost, we discussed yesterday status regarding food. Was one to eat the amniotic sac? Would one be interested in eating the amniotic sac? I guess that's a different question, and one which the Mishnah does not discuss. However, the Mishnah says nefesh yafa tochlenu. I say this totally unrelated to the daf. The placenta, you know, is the various minhagim to eat the placenta. So the not our minhag, and it's probably usher. But the there's a lot of discussion about eating the placenta, but the amniotic sac. And again, we're talking here about the animal. So anyway, so the Mishnah says that in terms of ochel, so does it have the status of ochel? Once something obtains the status of ochel, so then it's mekabel tumas ochlin, so then it's susceptible to tumah. And so with the Mishnah's position on that matter is for the person who wants to eat it, it's an ochel, but generally speaking, it's not ochel. Haba tumas nevela, being an avatumah, is being part of the animal, an unshechted animal. So the Mishnah said to that, it's not tumas nevela as well. And yesterday we went through a discussion in the Gemara regarding various products of an animal, meaning when I say products, I mean parts of the animal that are not readily edible, but if you cook it and prepare it, so you can render it edible. So what is the status with those things? So the Gemara had yesterday a debate on some of the things, notably the hide of the animal, the shilya of the animal. We talked yesterday about the hide of a donkey, obviously a donkey being a non-kosher animal, but still, the idea is that can it be rendered an ochel and make it susceptible to tumas ochlin? Anyway, we move on in the Gemara, and we are now up to the part of the Mishnah that talks about the amniotic sac that made its way out, that emerged. And generally speaking, when there is an amniotic sac, so there usually is a baby in tow. But there's no baby in tow. And so what happens now when the amniotic sac just simply emerges out of its mother? So if you go back to the Mishnah we learned yesterday, so the Mishnah records, Shilya Shiyatza Miksasa Asura Be'achila. So it is going to be prohibited to eat. Rashi on the Mishnah says that even only if just a small portion of the sac were to emerge, you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. And the reason is because we assume that there is fetus absorbed in the sac. Whereas the fetus right now, obviously, it's not discernible, it's dissolved, but there's fetus in the sac. And on top of that, an additional concern that which part of the fetus emerged. So Rashi points out back in the Mishnah that we're talking about the head emerging. Again, we don't know this to be the case, but certainly a consideration, a strong consideration. And so with the emergence of the small amount of the amniotic sac that has dissolved head as part of it, so therefore we're looking at a later. And so therefore it's asur b'achila, you're not allowed to eat it. So it's a nevela, it's a non-shechted animal. Then the Mishnah goes on to say that a siman v'lad b'isha, siman v'lad b'behema, both are true by humans and animals regarding the emergence of the amniotic sac. And then the Mishnah went on to describe what happens if this was the firstborn of an animal, which we're going to get to a little bit later this morning. But in the meantime, however, our first discussion is going to be regarding the emergence of the amniotic sac with or without a fetus. And what's the halacha? So again, we just learned the Mishnah together. An amniotic sac coming in of itself is now grounds for serious consideration that there was a fetus, but it just simply dissolved. We are on the Gemara 9 Zayin Amud Beis. We're starting at the two dots. It's towards the top of the Amud. Shil Yeshu Yatsasa. So the Gemara brings in the following machlokas. Amar Rav Elazar Lo Shanu Ela Sheini Mavlad. This is a discussion only when there is no fetus that emerged with the amniotic sac. So at that point in time now, we are only left to conclude that there was a fetus and it's dissolved in the amniotic sac. However, aval yeshi mavlad ein choshen levlad acher. However, if together with the emergence of the amniotic sac, you also have a fetus as well, and according to Rav Elazar, seemingly, it does not matter whether the fetus is connected or disconnected to the sac. We now have sufficient evidence to say, there's the sac, there's the fetus. Maybe the sac had another fetus inside of it. Maybe there was a dissolvement of that fetus in the sac. So according to Rav Elazar, we are not concerned about that. But rather, we're just simply saying that that's the sac, that's the fetus. And now that we know that that's the fetus to that sac, so now we know that that sac does not have any dissolved fetus in it. And again, we can go back to the Mishnah's point of anafish yafeh ochal behem. that if you're somebody who's not squeamish, so you can enjoy it. Rav Yochanan Amar, Bein Ein Ima Vlad, Bein Yesh Ima Vlad, Choshen Vlad Acher. Now, Rav Yochanan says, no, I don't care whether what else we discovered together in conjunction with the amniotic sac. The amniotic sac, we are worried that there was a fetus there. Either was another fetus that was discovered, that's another fetus. But in other words, I'm always concerned, says Rav Yochanan, that this amniotic sac had its own fetus and it's dissolved in the sac itself. Into the Gemara says, now, although at face value the machlokus is a machlokus, meaning the way it was just presented, but v'hamer Rav Yirmiyah l'chumra amar Rav Elazar. But we have a mesora. Rav Yirmiyah brings it down. That we know that in this particular machlokus, Rav Elazar is supposed to be the machmir. The way we just presented it, Rav Elazar is the meko. So it doesn't go along with the mesora that we have. So Ela Yidmar Hachi Yidmar. So what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to modify the machlokus to conform with the mesora of Rav Yirmiyah. Amar Rav Elazar l'shenu el'shen akshura b'vlad. Ava akshura b'vlad, ein choshen v'lad acher. Rav Elazar now in this new version has a leniency. It's not a major leniency, but it's still a leniency. If we have the emergence of the amniotic sac, no fetus inside, and then we have a fetus, and there's connective tissue between the sac and the fetus, so then we're good. So then we could say that this fetus belongs to this sac, and there's no other fetus to be concerned about. However, if you have a sac emerging, and you have a fetus emerging, and there's no connection between the two, so then we're going to suspect that this sac represented a different fetus, and so therefore we have to assume that there is dissolved fetus in the sac. Rav Yochanan Amar.
Can that be determined?
I'm just working with, it's a fair question. I don't know the answer. I'm just working with the positions given to us in the Gemara. Rav Yochanan Amar, Ein Lanu Ela Shulya Belovlad. Aval Yeshima Vlad, Bein Shura Belovlad, Bein Ein Shura Belovlad, Ein Choshen Lovlad Acher. Rav Yochanan over here now comes out to be the Mako, which is where we wanted him to come out because that's the Masorah that we had. Rav Yirmiyah taught us that Rav Elazar is a Machmir. Rav Yochanan says that we have a general principle that Ein Lanu Ela Shilya B'Lovlad, so it's impossible to have an amniotic sac without a fetus. If there was a fetus there discovered, doesn't matter whether it was connected or disconnected, if there was a fetus there, we can assign that fetus to that sac. So, and it doesn't matter whether it was connected or disconnected. And as long as there's a fetus there, and even if it was unconnected, according to Rav Yochanan, that means now that we know that that fetus belongs to that sac, and we know that there's no other fetus dissolved within the sac itself. And now the way the machlokus is now presented, Rav Yochanan comes out to be a mekel, which is based on the Mesorah of Rav Yirmiyah, who tells us that Rav Elazar is a machmir. Tanya kavase de Rav Elazar. And now having shaped and formed the machlokus between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan, the Gemara now points out that we have a brisa following the shita of Rav Elazar. Hamapelsman behe machai va'ov. Now here we're talking about a woman, a human, giving birth. And she gives birth to something which is mutated. Now, actually, we discussed this pretty recently. When a woman gives birth to something which is mutated, so is that considered a leida or not a leida? Answer, it's a machlokus. We're going to assume for today that we're going to follow like the shita of the Chachamim. Remember, a couple of days ago, we chazed over the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Meir views that that is, in fact, considered a leida, but we're not subscribing to that viewpoint in the sugya. In the sugya, we're going to go like the Chachamim. It's not a leida if what came out of her is not human in form. So she gave birth to something which was so mutated, it's not a leida. However, there also was an amniotic sac. And now, what do we say regarding the sac? So, if there is connective tissue between that mutated fetus that came out of her and the sac, so at that point in time, we now have the whole story. There's the sac, there's the fetus, there's nothing else. And being that that particular fetus is not human in form, so this is not going to be considered a leida. However, if there's no connection between the fetus that emerged, the mutated fetus that emerged from her, and the sac that emerged from her, so at this point in time now, it's anybody's guess. But when I say anybody's guess, what I mean is that we have to now be concerned that something was in that vlad, meaning a a non-mutated fetus, or to say it simpler, a regular fetus that was dissolved and was in the amniotic sac. And as a result of that, so what are the possibilities? Possibilities are really threefold. One, it was male. Two, it was female. Three, it was neither. And so under those circumstances, now you have to take the course of action while maintaining all three possibilities. And not for now, you could see the Rashi inside in terms of the Yemei Tuma, the Yemei Tahara, and entertaining the idea that it could be a male, could be a female, could be neither. So, by the way, on the fact that it could be neither, she gets no Yemei Tahara. Anyway, you have to entertain all three possibilities. Shani Omer, because the Braisa says, Shema Nimoch Shpir Shel Shulya, Shema Nimocha Shel Yasso Shel Shpir. Because where's the amniotic sac of that mutated fetus? Gone. Where's the fetus of that amniotic sac? Gone. Gone meaning not disappeared, but dissolved. So you have to take into consideration that if there is no connective tissue between the sac and the fetus, so then this fetus was connected to a different sac, and this sac was connected to a different fetus. This Braisa clearly supporting the position of Rav Elazar, that when you find a sac and a fetus, and there was no connection between the two, you have to entertain the possibility that there was another fetus there, dissolved and included in the sac. Hamavakershi Pila. Continuing in the Gemara, we're on Ayin Zayin Amud Beis. We are two-thirds of the way down. The Gemara now describes an animal who's delivering her firstborn. That firstborn that comes out of her. If it's a male, so then that's a bechor, with Kedushas bechor. If it's a female, it's a regular animal, chulin. What happened is that something came out of her. We don't know what it was. It was just basically a sac that came out of her. Again, we assume that in conjunction with every amniotic sac you have a fetus, but we don't know what the fetus was. What did we do with the sac? What did the Mishnah tell us? Give it to the dogs. What did we say when we learned the Mishnah? What? Huh? Give it to the dogs. 50% chance that this is a Bechor, with Kedusha's Bechor. And give it to the dogs? That's hard to understand. The Gemara immediately explains. So my taima, I'm a Ravika Berida Ravami, Rav Behemoth Yaldos Davar HaKadosh BeBechorah. Umiyad Behemoth Davar She'eno Kadosh BeBechorah. Umayniu Nidme. So, generally speaking, I'm throwing out numbers just so that I can make this Gemara as clear as possible. 90% of the time, right, made up numbers, but the point is still going to be good. 90% of the time what comes out of her is a viable baby, which would have Kedushas Bechor. 10% of the time what comes out of her is something mutated, what the Gemara describes as a Nidma. A Nidma does not have Kedushas Bechor. You can see Rashi, by the way, the first word in Rashi, you're going to love it. Nidme, what's that first word in Rashi? Counterfeit. Okay? Good? Anyway, if what comes out is a mutated animal, mutation in this particular case simply means it does not resemble its mother, it does not have Kedushas Bechor. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Bechor, that darshins, doesn't matter. Meaning, of course it matters, but the facts are on the ground. So 90% of the time, she's going to give birth to something which could have Kedushas Bechor. 10% of the time, it's not going to have Kedushas Bechor. Good. Now, of that 90%, what are my chances, male, female? 50-50. So now, of that 90%, so it breaks down to 45-45. So that means to say now, of the sum total of births that she could have that would result in an animal with Kedushas Bechor, 45% of the time. Where 55% of the time, it's either going to be a female or a Nidme. So now what do we have? We have a Miut. Good. That's the Gemara's explanation. So what we have over here is a rov, a simple majority, that the amniotic sac that came out of her, where we don't know what fetus it was and what fetus dissolved into the sac, so because the minority of the time it is not going to have Kedushas Bechor, so therefore it does not have to be treated with Kedusha. Now if it's a animal which is a carbon, a female animal which is a carbon, that gave birth. So what do we do with the amniotic sac that emerged out of her? So what we do is we bury it, because it has Kedusha, like she has Kedusha. So my tamar ruba bar mikdashahu, because over here, obviously, whatever comes out of her, male or female, is going to have the Kedusha of the carbon. Continuing, ve'en kovar nosa, and now we're finishing up the Mishnah, and we're finishing up the Perek. And here we're describing a practice. A practice of the we'll call it an Amorite practice, right? The Mishnah called it that, right? Darche ha'amori. And that is that if, God forbid, a woman miscarried and she and the sack came out of her, so what they used to do is they used to take the amniotic sack and they would hang it. They would hang it at the crossroads. They would hang it on a tree. And it was superstition. Rashi and the Mishnah actually used the word nichush, divination. Some sort of superstitious practice that in doing so, you're going to ward off the evils so that this will not happen again. It has no basis in medicine, and it has no basis in the Torah. And therefore, it is prohibited. It falls under the category of nichush, and one is not allowed to do that. And so that's what the Mishnah taught us, and the Gemara just simply amplifies the point. In Kovar Nosa, Abai v'Rava Dami Tavayu. So Abai and Rava says, here's your rule. Is it something which is allowed, or superstitious and therefore forbidden? Kol davar sheyesh bo refuah ein bo mishum darchei amori. Ein bo refuah yesh bo darchei amori. So if it's something that has medicinal and therapeutic value, fine. If it has no known therapeutic value, it is now in the occult, it is divination, it's prohibited. There's a really interesting Rashi over here. Yesh bo mishum refuah. Rashi writes, give me examples of things that have therapeutic value. Kagon mashke osam. So Rashi says, some sort of drink, some sort of medicine. O lacha shaloche shalamaka, or a whispering that's done over the wound. So back in the day, what was very popular is that there would be a wound, and so they would whisper, and usually the whispering would be psukim over the wound. Remember how long ago were we there, where we talked about being lochi shem Hashem in lochelik lolam haba, right? That's the Mishnah back in Sanhedrin. Okay, anyway. So, but it's interesting though, Rashi, but that's Shem Hashem. Rashi over here puts it under the category of therapy and medicine. Really interesting Rashi. The Vahatanya, back to the Gemara. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a Braisa. Ilan Shemeshir Beres of Sokra Besukra of Vatorna Bavanim. Let's say you have a tree, a fruit-bearing tree, and what happens? It's dropping its fruit too early. Okay, something's wrong with the tree. It's got some sort of ailment, and it's dropping the fruit too early. So what can you do? So, Sokra Basikra, you could take some red dye and paint the tree red, and Toan Abavanim, and you could put stones on it. Now, when I say stones on it, please don't ask me. I don't know. Where exactly we're putting the stones? On the roots? On the branches? Ich weiß nicht. But it doesn't matter. The point is that the Gemara is comfortable with one of these practices, but uncomfortable with another of these practices. So the Gemara says the stones, the placing of the stones, putting weight on the tree, basically trying to slow it down, because it is, the way Rashi describes it, it's a fatty tree. Maybe Rashi's describing the sap, but whatever. I'm borrowing language from Rashi. It's a fatty tree, and basically it needs to slow down so that the fruits stay on the tree longer. So there is a natural explanation of putting the stones on the tree. But then we're dyeing the tree red. What's that? So Elasokra Basikra, Amai. So the Gemara says, what is that? And if it doesn't have a natural explanation, so then what it is Usr. But the Gemara quotes a Braisa that says that it's fine. And so what's the story? So the Gemara gives us a story. Amai ki echa delichzuye inshe vilibai rachame ilave. Explains the Gemara. What's going to happen as follows. When you mark off the tree, it's not that there's something special in the color red. It's just that people are going to notice it. And when people see that a tree is marked red, they'll know, injured tree, sick tree. And now when I daven, so as part of my davening, I'm going to daven on behalf of the tree. So many interesting points, first and foremost. The most obvious point that the Gemara is making is that davening on behalf of somebody is part of the therapy. It's part of the refuah. And so as a result of that, you can do things that will inspire and instigate people to daven on your behalf. Another point of significant interest is the idea that not only can you daven on behalf of humans, but you can daven on behalf of the natural order as well. That also has an effective value to it. Kiditanya the Gemara. Right. And Shul, right? Right. You just don't. You daven. There's no nusach atfilah. The Gemara doesn't have one. Kedetayin, the Gemara quotes a brisa of a tamitami yikra regarding the mitzvah. So we know the Gemara says this in a number of places that tamitami yikra. He calls out that he's tamei. Tzarech lo odia l'rabim v'rabim vakshim alav rachamim. And it's not that the mitzvah, even though he's going to be quarantined and even though he's going to be put in social timeout, nevertheless, it is important. Imperative. I can say it stronger. It's imperative that people should know his condition so that people will daven on his behalf and he will receive a refuah shlema. V'chein mishir about David Sarach lo'odia l'rabim. Anytime that you have some sort of thing that's unfortunate to you, so tell other people. V'rabim v'avakshin alav rachamim. And that people daven your behalf. Amar avina kaman talina kufsa bedikla. If let's say you have a palm tree and again it's dropping its dates too early. So there used to be a minhag where they would tie the bag of dates and hang it on the tree. And again, people would walk by, see it, and know, I'm davening about that tree. So, kaman ki aitana, and the Gemara says, and it follows the brisa that we just quoted on the bottom of the previous amud, that this kind of behavior is in fact permitted. It is not superstition. It's inspiring others to daven. That's good. Hajlach behem makasha, that's the end of the fourth parak of the Masechta. Yep. The tree, you're not that. I understand. The tree is owned by somebody. The person wants better fruit. We start now the next parak of the Masechta, and like I said, as from this point going forward, every parak is, and I say it both literally and figuratively, is its own chapter. So what we're going to be doing now is we're basically going to be covering mitzvah upon mitzvah that relates to animals. This next parak that we're covering is Osav Espino, the prohibition of the Torah, not to shecht a mother and its offspring on the same day. The parak after that is the mitzvah of Kisu Adam, the mitzvah of covering the blood. The parak after that is Gidanusha, all about the prohibition of eating the sciatic nerve of an animal. The parak after that is Basa B'chalav, the prohibition to eat meat and milk. V'chule, v'chule. So the next four parakim are all wonderful compartmentalized discussions of various isurim and mitzvos that relate to animals. We are discussing, we're starting now the parak of Osav Espino, the prohibition in the Torah of not shechting a mother and its offspring on the same day. Would have been better, admittedly, if I brought in the Sefer Chinuch and I get to read it inside. I'm going to say it outside, I'm going to paraphrase. Please forgive me for any mistake that I make, but basically, the Sefer Chinuch, as we all know, written by, don't answer the question, we're not sure, but written by one of the Spanish Rishonim, during the 13th century. We know location, we know historical time period. We think it's the Ra'ah, we're not totally sure, but in any event, regardless, so it's an extraordinarily important work. It counts the mitzvahs of the Torah. He basically follows the Rambam's minyan in terms of minyan and mitzvos. And for every mitzvah in the Torah, he gives a tam mitzvah, a reason behind the mitzvah. To be clear, a reason behind the mitzvah is not that we do the mitzvah because of the reason. A reason behind the mitzvah is a tam. It's a taste. Just like the taste of the food has nothing to do with its nutritional value. The taste of the food just simply makes it go down better. So too, tam ha-mitzvah. It is there to give us taste to the mitzvah. Helps us sweeten the mitzvah. Understand the mitzvah a little bit better. We like when we understand things. Nothing to do with the nutritional value of the mitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch writes regarding the Tam HaMitzvah of Osav Espino that the Torah, first and foremost, wants us to be somebody who is difficult in nature,
callous.
Who is callous in nature. Excellent word. An achzari. And somebody who is shechting an animal, so good, that could be justified. It's an animal, I'm hungry, it's dinner, I'm feeding me, I'm feeding my family, and okay. But if you're shechting a mother and its offspring on the same day, so that is a sense of callousness, and Akash Baruch Hu wants to inculcate us the midah of being a more compassionate and gentle human being. Good. Right? It's a recurring theme that occurs for many of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Correct. So that is one point the Sefer Chinuch makes. An additional point that he makes is that Akash Baruch Hu wants us to propagate the species. meaning it is basically a theme of not destroying all of creation. Now, obviously, when we're shechting an animal, so we're taking away some of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. But if we take out the two generations in the same day, so that is it's almost like a massacre. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants his creation to perpetuate and to propagate.
And do it one day after the next?
Again, this is Tam. I'm trying to be as clear as possible. These are Tamei HaMitzvah. This is not why we do the mitzvos. These are just simply these. You know, it makes the mitzvah sweeter. Lessons that we can learn from the mitzvah, but it's not why we do the mitzvah. So that's another idea that's expressed by the Sefer HaChinuch. See more for this in the Sefer HaChinuch. In the meantime, however, there is an issur in the Torah of oso the espino, not to shecht it and its mother. First and foremost, we're going to see this in today's daf already. For sure, it's the mother and its offspring. What about dad? Okay, what about dad and the offspring? Now, linguistically, grammatically, in the Torah, it says oso the espino. What is oso? Oso is generally masculine. So it sounds like from the Lashon HaTorah that it is the father and the offspring as well. We are going to be seeing in the course of the of this perek, maybe yes, maybe no. And the halacha is somewhere in the middle.
But we know.
Huh?
We know it also implies male.
Ah, so and when we know this for sure when it comes to offspring, it does not matter whether it's male or female. That we're going to see also in the course of our perek as well.
In what parsha?
It's in Parsha Zemur. So the day. What is considered a day? You're not allowed to shecht a mother and its offspring on the same day. That's coming up later in this Mishnah. The Mishnah, the Mishnahites are going to be discussing that. We're not going to get that to today's daf. Okay, so far so good. Those are the basic ideas. Another basic idea, which Rashi says in the Mishnah, but I'll say it outside as part of the introduction, is that there's an Isser Vosa Vos Beno, even if you're not the one who shechted both animals on the same day. Let's say somebody shechted the mother today, and all you did was just shecht the offspring. You didn't do both. You are in total violation of Oso Ve'espino. So in other words, Oso Ve'espino is not on one person shechting both animals. It's the idea that the animals are not to be shecht on the same day. And if you are the cause of that shechting of the second animal, so then you are in violation. What if the first animal died without a shechita? So then there is no violation of Oso Ve'espino. The Isser of Oso Ve'espino is Oso Ve'espino lo sishchetu b'yom echad. You're not allowed to shecht two animals on the same day. So if the mother died today without a shechita, so then there is no Isser of shechting the offspring that day. What if it was a shechita, but the shechita went awry? So that also is going to be discussed a little bit later on as well. Obviously, many details. This is all by way of introduction.
So if we do the same thing, what happens with them? Do they consume them? Do you bury
that,
them?
That question will be answered. Okay, good. Yes. What a wonderful question. Okay, I encourage you to come this afternoon to the afternoon kolo. I'm going to be discussing that question. Okay, good. Okay. And if not, I'll record and I'll send it to you. One or the other. Okay. Danny's question, by the way, just in case you did not hear, Danny's question was that in the previous parak we talked about how when you shecht an animal with an offspring inside, so one way to look at it is that you're shechting the two animals concurrently. The shechita of the fetus is shechted in conjunction with its mother. And so why is it that you're not in violation of Oso Ve'espino? It's a wonderful question. There's not one answer to the question. I saw a couple of approaches. Okay. Anyway, let's start with the Mishnah Oso Ve'espino Noeg Bein Ba'aretz Bein B'chutz La'aretz. It applies both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi points out over here, we knew this. It's not a mitzvah hatluya ba'aretz. It is not an agricultural halacha. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is making this point over here because as we're going to see in the upcoming Mishnayos, this kind of contrast is made later on where it is certainly more relevant. And you know the style of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah likes getting into certain patterns. And so this is a pattern that we're going to be seeing. So even though it's not exactly when we're breaking ground over here with the shechting animals that you're not allowed to do it both in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, the Mishnah makes it over here because that's going to be a theme, a pattern of the Mishnayos. So Nog Bein Baritz Bein Bechutzarz Bifnei Abayis Bishlo Bifnei Abayis. It does not matter whether it is there is a Beis Hamikdash or there is no Beis Hamikdash. This is not related to Kachim. Bechulin Uve Mikdashim. And then the Mishnah says it clearly. It is related to both Karbanos and non-Karbanos. This is an Isser that applies across the board. By the way, the Pasuk in the Torah, its placement is actually next to halachas that are carbon related. So, in fact, the Gemara later on will point out that there's a Havamina that this should only apply to carbonos, not to non-carbonos. But that's clearly not the halacha. The halacha is it applies to carbonos and non-carbonos. Ketzad. And now the Mishnah is going to begin. And basically now, this is going to be heavy lifting. Because what the Mishnahs are going to be doing right now is going over 12 different permutations of what were to happen if I were to shecht an animal and offspring on the same day. The variables include, if the mother is a carbon, the child is not a carbon. If the mother is not a carbon, the child is a carbon. What if we shechted one inside the Beis HaMikdash, the other one outside the Beis HaMikdash? And where there are a number of variables to take into consideration. And the Mishnayos, like an algorithm, will simply go through every single scenario with every single result in every one of these scenarios. Things that you and I need to know before going through all these permutations. One, shechting the offspring on the same day of its mother is a violation of the Torah, is an active violation of the law in the Torah. If done intentionally, one is going to be subject to malchus. Two, if you shecht a carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that is an isser in the Torah. It is such a serious isser that it brings about the kares penalty. But in addition to that, it's also a law. If one were to do it intentionally, one would be subject to malchus. Those are two, and three, I know I made this point already, but I'll say it again. Shechting of the mother and its offspring does not have to be accomplished by one person. Even if two separate people were to do the two separate acts, the second person would be in violation of Osa Vespino. Okay, those are just some basic pieces of yedios, of knowledge, that we need to know in order to appreciate and understand all these Mishnayos. There are going to be 12. I counted it out. I numbered it in my Mishnayos. We are at number one. Ketzad. Hashochet Osa Vespino Chulin. So, the first permutation is the easiest of them all, where they are both non-carbonos. I shechted them outside the Beis HaMikdash, is where I'm supposed to shecht it, and I did so on the same day. They are both going to be kosher. Even though you violate the Isser of Osa Vespino by shechting the second one, that is not a psul. It doesn't disqualify the second animal. The second animal is still going to be kosher, but the person who shechted it is in violation of the Torah, violating this Rav Osav Espino, and therefore subject to Malchus, he will be receiving 40 lashes. And by the way, discount, 39 lashes. But anyway, that's a Gemara in the third parak of Malchus. Scenario number two. Kajim Bechutz, if let's say you shecht both animals outside the Beis HaMikdash, the mother and its offspring, and they are karbanos, and you did so outside the Beis HaMikdash, Harishon Chayev Kares, the first one that you shechted, you're going to be subject to the Kares penalty. Why? Shchutei chutz. Ushneim psulim. Both of them are going to be disqualified because you shechted them outside the Beis HaMikdash. Shechting a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash is a psul. And shneim sofkim esarbaim. Both the person who shechted the first animal and the person who shechted the second animal are both eligible to receive malchus. The first person who shechted the first animal is in fact going to be subject to malchus because he violated the Isser Torah of shchutei chutz. The person who shechted the second animal is going to be subject to Malchus because he violated the Isser of Oso the Espino. How about the second person being subject to the Isser of Shchutei Chutz? He is not going to be subject to the Isser of Shchutei Chutz. Why? We have an idea, Rashi over here explains, we have a concept known as Mechusar Zman. Mechusar Zman says that if something is premature, and therefore ineligible to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, an animal that's born is Mechusar Zman for the first week of its life. Only first eligible to be brought as a carbon on its eighth day. If the mother is shechted today, its offspring is premature to be brought today, it can only be brought tomorrow. Shechting it today is Mechusar Zman, and so therefore cannot be brought as a carbon. Here's your basic rule. If something cannot be brought as a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash, shechting it outside the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be a violation of Shechut Echutz. So the person who shechted the second animal outside, although violating the Isser of Osav Espino, and is going to receive Malchus for Osav Espino, but on a technicality, is not going to be in violation of Shechut Echutz. Scenario number three. Chulin Bifnim, let me come after. So I'll be more than happy to explain after. So chulim bifnim shneim psulim, v'ashini sofek is arba'im. If let's say both of the animals are chulim and they were both shechted inside, so the inside the azara, so they're both going to be disqualified. Chulin ba'azara is a psul, and so both animals are going to be disqualified. V'ashini sofek is arba'im, and the second person who shechted is going to be subject to malchus. He violated the isser of oso v'es b'no. Number four, kashim bifnim. If let's say karbanos were shechted in the Beis HaMikdash, rishon kasher or pater. Now the first one is going to be kasher, and he's also going to be exempt from malchus. A point which is obvious, meaning for the first one he did what was correct. So to say that he's exempt from malchus obviously is not there to teach us that we would have thought he's going to get malchus. It's just there as a contrasting point to the next part of the next part of the Mishnah. So, Harishon Kasher, the first carbon that shechted in the Beis HaMikdash, check, it's good. Vashini Sofek HaSarabayim Upasol. The second animal that was shechted is a violation of Osav Espino. It's going to be disqualified as a carbon. Why? Mechusar Zman. Because once again, since his mother was shechted today, so therefore the offspring is not eligible till tomorrow, and so therefore as a carbon it's going to be Pasol, but still he violated the Isser of Osav Espino. Number five, chulin v'kachim b'chutz. Let's say, and we're going here specifically in order, says Rashi. The mother was a chulin. The offspring was a karbon. And we're shechting it specifically in that order, where first we did the chulin, then we did the karbon. And we did both of them outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Harishon kasher, so the first animal is fine. It was chulin that was shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. Check. And upater, and obviously no liability, no punishment. He didn't do anything wrong. Vashini sofek is arbaim apostle. The second animal, however, that shechted outside. Now remember, the second animal is a carbon, which means now that it was Shkut Echutz, but you're not going to be in violation of Shkut Echutz because it's Mechusar Zman, because the mother was shechted today, so that means that this is ineligible today. And so therefore, on the Shkut Echutz front, you're going to be exempt, but you violated also Vespano. And so therefore, you're going to be subject to Malchus. It's also going to be disqualified because it was shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. Scenario number six. Kachim v'chulin b'chutz. If, let's say, he shechted first the carbon, then the chulin animal, again, the carbon's the mother, the chulin animal is the offspring, and you did so outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Harishon chayev kares upasol. So for the first animal that is shechut echutz, it was eligible to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. You shechted it outside the Beis HaMikdash. It was the first animal. So therefore, one is going to be subject to the kares penalty and malchus. V'hasheni kasher. And the second animal is going to be kasher. But the person who shechted the second animal is going to be eligible for malchus because he violated the isser of osav espino, which is exactly what the Mishnah says. Both of them are going to be receiving malchus for two different reasons. The first person for violating shechut echutz, the second person for violating osav espino. Scenario... Yeah, of course. The scenario number seven. Chulin v'kachim bifnim. The first animal that was shechted was a chulin animal in the azara. The second animal shechted was a carbon in the azara. Shneim psulim. Both animals are going to be disqualified. The chulin, obviously, for being chulin shebe azara. The second animal, for being premature, it's mechusar zman. Hasheni sofek es arbaim. You receive malchus for osav espino on the second animal. What about chulin shebe azara? Aren't you going to receive malchus for chulin shebe azara? And the answer simply is no. Chulin shebe azara is not a formal law of the Torah. You don't get malchus for that. Number eight, scenario number eight. Kachim v'chulin bifnim. If let's say the first animal you shecht is a carbon, the second animal is chulin, they're both done in the Beis HaMikdash. Harishon kasher pater. The first animal, check. You did exactly what you were supposed to do. A carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. Vashini sofek zarbaim apostle. Second animal is going to be a chulin animal. Chulin shebe azara. And so you're not going to be receiving malchus for chulin shebe azara, but you will be receiving malchus for Osav Espino. And the second animal that shechted in the Azara is disqualified because it's chulin shebal zara, the person who shechted it is going to get malchus for osav espeno. Next, number 9, chulin bechutz ubifnim. You shecht your first animal. Both animals are chulin, mother and offspring. The first animal shechted outside. Second animal shechted inside. Harishon kasher pater. For the first animal, you did nothing wrong, no good, no foul. However, Hasheni sofeg esarbayim upasol. But for the second animal that was shechted, that was a violation of osav espeno, despite the fact that it was chulin sheba azara. That part's true, but it's also osav espeno, and so therefore it is. The person who shechted is going to be subject to malchus. The animal itself is going to be disqualified. Why is the animal going to be disqualified? Because it was chulin be azara. Number 10, kashem mechutzu bifnim. Carbon that was shechted first, mother and offspring were both carbonos. First one was shechted outside, second one was shechted inside. Rishon chayiv karis. The first animal is going to be subject to the karis penalty. That is shchut echutz. Ushneim sofkim esari bayim. Ushneim psulim. Both people are going to be receiving malchus. Person number 1 receives malchus for shechting a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash, shchut echutz. Person number 2 shechted the carbon in the Beis HaMikdash. He violated oso ve'espeno. They're both going to be receiving malchus. Both carbon is going to be disqualified. The first carbon is disqualified because it's a result of shchut echutz. The second animal is going to be disqualified because mechuser zman, it's premature. Number 11, we're almost done. Chulin bifnim uvechutz, a non-carbon animal. That the first one, the mother was shechted in the Beis HaMikdash, the second one was shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. Harishon pasul upater. The first animal is going to be disqualified as it's chulin ba'azara and disqualified. However, no malchus. Again, chulin ba'azara is not a formal law in the Torah. No malchus. Vasheni sofek et sarabayim. The second person who shechted that chulin animal outside the Beis HaMikdash is going to be receiving malchus for the violation of osav espeno. As far as shchut echutz is concerned, no, because it is mechuser zman, it's premature. The kasher. The animal itself is going to be kasher because the only thing that was violated with that animal is only the isser of osav espeno. Osav espeno does not disqualify the animal. And finally, number 12. Kasher mifnim uvechutz. Let's say a karma was shechted both inside and outside, meaning the mother shechted inside, the offspring outside, they were both karbanos. Harishon kasher pater, once again, the first one is going to be kasher, because it's exactly what you were supposed to do. Vasheni sofek is arbayim apostle. Second animal, you're going to receive malchus for violating the isser of osav espeno. You are also going to be disqualified, the animal is going to be disqualified because it was a carbon that was shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash. And again, let's reiterate, what about shchut echutz? It is shchut echutz, but you're not in violation of shchut echutz because mechuser zman. You're only violating shchut echutz if it's currently eligible to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Because it's mechuser zman, and because it's currently not able to be currently brought in the Beis HaMikdash, one is not formally violating the isser of shchut echutz for shechting it outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, I'm going to breathe and even take a sip. Yeah, in other words, why is the Gemara acting like an algorithm going through every one of these scenarios? I mean, I'd be hard pressed to find a chiddush in every one of the cases. And right now, I need a nap. So the no. The answer is I'd be very hard pressed to find a chiddush in every one of these scenarios. Certainly, I mean, I basically went over the basic chidushim that present themselves through these cases, but to go through all 12, Danny, it's a great question.
These are all benazid.
Yeah.
So if it's not benazid, what happens to the animal? The animal is still
depends.
Same?
Depends which scenario. Ask me after. Tana Rabbanan. Minayin lo osav espeno shenog b'mikdashim. How do I know that the isser of osav espeno applies to karbanos tam alam asharo kesev oez kiyev alei v'ksiv basri v'shoro osav espeno lo sishkutu b'yam echad. So limin al osav espeno shenog b'mikdashim. So to the question of how do I know that the isser of osav espeno applies to karbanos, the answer is really simple. Context. Look where the isser is located in the Torah. It's juxtaposed right next to the isser of shor o kesev oez kiyev alei. That pasuk in the Torah is describing a carbon, where the Torah says that if you want to bring an animal as a carbon, you must wait until it's eighth day. And right after that is the isser of osav espeno, so contextually it's by carbonos. So ve'ema b'mugdashim in b'chulon lo. To which now the Gemara says, you know what? Now the argument's going to go in the other direction. Meaning now it's compelling to say the isser of osav espeno should only apply to carbonos and not to chulon. So the Gemara says, sure, hifzik ha'inyan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the pasuk opens up with shor oseh, osov espano. Now, contextually, we know we're talking about a shor. The pasuk immediately beforehand says, v'shor oseh, o eis ki yevaleid. We're talking about a shor. We're talking about a seh. So then the next pasuk, which introduces us to osov espano, doesn't have to open up with the word shor. Why does it open up with the word shor? Because basically the Torah is resetting. We're new iser that applies across the board. Chulin and mukdashim. Ve'ema b'chulin and mukdashim lo. So the Gemara says, okay, so if it's a reset, so then maybe it applies to chulin, not mukdashim. Let me finish. So the Gemara says, b'mukdashim lo. Ksiv vishor. Vav mosi v'alinyan rishon. So the Gemara says, the vav is there as a bridge. So in other words, we are balancing both a bridge and a reset. The bridge is telling us that osav espanol applies to karbanos. The repetition of the word shor is also telling us that it applies to chulin as well. Imakachim klayim lo, avosav espanol klayim lo. So the Gemara says, okay, but if we are bridging it to karbanos, so why don't we use the same rules that we know regarding karbanos? Can I use any animal that is not a purebred for a karban? And the answer is no. If I have an animal that's not a purebred, it's a hybrid between, it's a cross between two animals. Is it subject to osav espanol, as we're going to learn? The answer is yes. To which the Gemara is basically saying, but I don't understand, the vav, the bridge. So the Gemara says, alamatanya osav espanol nog beklaim v'koi. So the iser of osav espanol applies to hybrids, to cross, to animals which are products of crosses, and also to the koi. V'od seksiv, and on top of that, also the pasuk says the word seh as well. So v'amar rava, and on that, Rava says, Zebanav. We have over here a precedent. Kol makam shenemar seh einu ela lahotzi esaklayim. That when we have the word seh, it's there to preclude, to exclude crossed animals. So how can you make the argument that the iser vosav espano applies to both purebred and also to crossed animals as well? So amakra o larabos esaklayim. So the Gemara says that we have the word o. Shor o chesev. So the word O in the middle, that's a ribui, and that's coming to include klayim. So hayomi baila lechalik. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Don't I need that word O? Isn't it there for the purposes of division? Desakadat chamina ad deshachit shur ubeno se ubeno lo mechayev kamash malan lechalik. So the Gemara wonders. I might have thought, without the word O, that one would be in violation of osav espano, only when he shechs a shor and its offspring, and a seh and its offspring. And isn't the word O over there to be divide and say that no, you only need to shech one type and its offspring? So the Gemara says, mi beno nafka. We knew that already. Oso ve'es beno, singular. V'akademi by lelecha detanya, the Gemara says, okay, but don't I need the word O for something else? For the following brisa, ilu nemar shor v'seh ubeno, ha'isi omer ashi yishchot shor v'seh ubeno. Tamlama shor O seh, osav espano. So the havamina is, how do I violate the iser osav espano? Take a shor, no offspring necessary. Take a seh, take the offspring of the seh, that's how you violate it. Why? Because read the pasuk. Shor, seh, ubeno. So maybe I have to shech three animals in order to violate. And that is, that's the havamina. The maskana is no. Where is that maskana coming from? Isn't it coming from the O, separating the shor and the seh? My love may O, isn't it coming from that conjunction? So the Gemara says, my love may O nafkale, lo, may O so. The Gemara says, lo sishchatu O so, biyom echad. The O so is coming to tell me that I don't need to shecht two animals and one of its offsprings, just O so the espano, one animal and its offspring. So the Gemara now at this juncture in time is arguing that the word O in the middle is serving not as a bridge, not as a connector, not to dispel any of these havaminas, but rather to include kalayim. Even though by karbanos, kalayim are excluded, but when it comes to the Yisrael Osav Espano, kalayim are included. And how do I know that? So right now at this juncture, the Gemara thinks it's coming from the word O. Okay, we are still in the middle of a sentence, but we'll finish it tomorrow. Let's quickly recap. Today we talked about, we started with the amniotic sac. And we talked about if there is a fetus not in the sac, but next to the sac, does it make a difference whether it's connected or disconnected? Machlokas Amarayim, a brisa siding with the second version of Rav Elazar. That if it's connected, we assume that that amniotic sac and that fetus are one entity. If they're disconnected, we have to assume that there was another fetus and it's dissolved in the sac. We talked today about an amniotic sac coming out of an animal. It's firstborn. Does it have kedushas b'chor? No. Why not? We explained because it's a miut. What about if it's a carbon with an amniotic sac? That does have kedusha, needs to be buried. The perek ended off with superstitions. If something has no therapeutic value, it is superstition, it's nichush, it's aser. We started the perek of Osav Espino this morning. We went through 12 scenarios, learning out the details of Osav Espino and the various permutations and chidushim coming out from the Mishnah. And then the Gemara, we started the discussion of where is the source of Osav Espino. That's the pasuk in the Torah. How do we know it applies to karbanos? How do we know it applies to chulin? How do we know that it applies to kalayim? So some of the basic issues that we discussed in today's daf.